Okay, our theme for the year is becoming giving glory, okay? And we're actually seeking to discover, each of us and together as a church, what it means to be truly human. Because we are not yet fully human. The Bible teaches that we are made in the image and the likeness of God, but that image and that likeness, although we can still see it, is marred, our relationships are broken. And the Bible teaches that Jesus comes really as the one truly human being, while being also fully God. And he comes so that every other human being who believes in him and receives in him may be transformed and made into one who is truly human, reflecting that image of God. And it's that clear teaching of the Old and New Testaments, which we particularly focus on at the major festivals, at Christmas and Easter, that we think about the coming of the Messiah, God, the Anointed One, who comes in flesh, not just to send a representative, but God coming as a true human being, so that he may put to rights all that is wrong, that he may make possible the resurrection to immortal life, bringing reconciliation, bringing the peacemaker. And so it's a great celebration, Easter, but it is through pain and struggle that Jesus wins that tremendous prize, that gift for each of us. And we read that he looked for the joy ahead of the struggle as he went through the difficulty. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame. And it was a very difficult road. And we're thinking on this Palm Sunday about why crowds gather. I'd like you to think about the crowds. Okay, why crowds gather? Think of all the crowds you can think of, all right? Can you think where there are crowds? Anybody like to tell me? Football match, you get crowds.
Concert.
Big concert, okay, so we see that All Points East this summer in the park.
Westfield
shopping, yeah. Yep, you're going to give me a suggestion? Cricket matches, yeah. You've seen not such big crowds, but on these one-day really fast matches, which are really cool, you see big crowds, and certainly in other countries even bigger than here. Any other crowds? Accident, people may come to it, Pauline. Okay, march of protest, something like that.
Riots,
you might see riots, something came from over here.
Film premieres
of the celebrities or whatever. You may also see amazing crowds of migrants moving across the face of the earth. And a crowd is simply just a large group of people, larger group of people who gather, and often it's just for some sort of temporary assembly. It may not be forever. Sometimes, as we said, the word crowd can describe a mob, a negative thing. But crowds often have a common purpose. They're there for a reason. They often have a common set of emotions and feelings that they share together. If you imagine that amazingly large crowd that gathered almost without expectation after the death of Princess Diana 20 years ago, it was completely unexpected, the crowds that would gather. In fact, people have written books and theses about why did that phenomena happen at that time. And crowd psychology and mob psychology are studied, and people have different views. Belongi in the 1950s classified crowds and their purpose, sometimes a spectator, sometimes a demonstrator, or sometimes an escaper, so like the migrants moving out. Others have used different categories. So Monboyce in the 60s spoke about casual crowds that just come together. It's a pop-up. Conventional crowds, people that might go to worship. Expressive crowds that might be wanting to show something, like Sue Kreitzman's colour walk in Spitalfields a few weeks ago. And aggressive crowds that come to make a point. Not all crowds of protest are aggressive, and they're very, very important that you can gather in a country like ours more than groups of two or three or others, that you can actually gather. And crowds have different functions. Although sometimes they're spontaneous, they can exhibit different behaviours and also different moralities. You've heard about lynch mobs that are formed sometimes. And I can never believe, even how, though it is so terrible sometimes, people's crimes when they're arrested, that people gather and spit and bang on the side of vans. And I just don't know, it's somehow caught some feelings that happen. And different moralities. So crowds can be one minute behaving really well and then behaving really badly. And I'm afraid I did use the example of football players. The polar extremes. We can have this great sense of community and can be singing hymns and hugging, you know, where blokes never normally hug and all this stuff and whatever. There's that sense. And then there can be that loss of individual responsibility and the psychology of the mob taking over as people go through European cities and you think, oh, I'm not very proud to be British or English today type thing. So the mob can change. Crowd can change. And during Holy Week, during the time that Jesus was moving towards Jerusalem, there were various crowds. There wasn't just one crowd. There were crowds within crowds. And they really changed. I want you to think about this because you might think you know, especially you oldies, might think you know all about Easter. But the reason we think about it is to reflect upon it and its meaning. Jeff in the office before was praying that we'd learn something new about Palm Sunday today. And I was sort of just praying that we'll learn, you know, what God wants us to know today. But we reflect on it. And in the case of the crowd following Jesus, we read that that crowd made the Pharisees afraid because they saw Jesus' popularity growing and they said, look, the whole world, they didn't necessarily mean the whole globe that we've just sung about, but all the world we know, all the people we know is going out to him, they're following him. And that's a threat, they felt. Often the bigger the crowd, the bigger the threat. And crowds can be that. Jeff won't believe that's not true. I go with Jeff to Notting Hill Carnival, and I like aspects of it. But the year that I began to feel my feet were not touching the ground, and I was just being carried along, I thought, I might be getting a bit old for this type thing. But Jeff would be there every year if he could. And some of you are going to Trafalgar Square, I think, on Friday for the Passion Play. And you're going to experience something of the crowd. The Pharisees thought that their influence and power to control the masses, the crowd, was being weakened. Now, they may never have been very popular, the Pharisees, but they were certainly feared. And they were generally obeyed. People were afraid of them. So Jesus' following was a threat to their influence and their control. They needed to divide the crowd because the crowd was coming together. But on the Passover parade, they dare not intervene because the crowd could turn against them. Crowds can turn. Have you ever experienced that in a playground? Everything's going okay and they're quite happy, or on the football field or playing netball, and suddenly something happens and it turns, and you think, oh, this is a bit nasty. You can get it certainly when there's alcohol around. People are in a party that seems happy, and suddenly it's a turning. A crowd can turn. Now, we don't know the size of the crowd, because I want to say to you, there was a crowd within a crowd on that Palm Sunday. The crowd, we're told, was the ordinary, the common people, the hoi polloi. And that's not meant in a negative in the Greek. It just means the ordinary people. Those were the bulk of people that followed Jesus. But also people of influence were beginning to follow Jesus. People in Herod's court, some of the Roman soldiers and others were fascinated by Jesus. And they're thinking, who is this guy? What are the facts? Who is this that people are following? Who is he? As he said many things about himself. Who is he? So they were showing an interest. Third slide out of the four. Why was this big crowd in Jerusalem? Can anybody tell me, why was there a big crowd? All you need to do is read this. But why was there a big crowd in Jerusalem? Who can tell me? Then I know you can read. Right, the biggest of crowds was because it was the Passover. And that's traditionally one of the three main holidays in which Jews make their pilgrimage to Jerusalem from all the parts of the known world at that time in the Middle East. And they come to take part in the festival of Passover or Pesach, and especially as they focus on the magnificent temple. Look at me, I'm more beautiful. They focus on the temple and they celebrate God's deliverance, both from the captivity of Egypt, and we'll be thinking about Egypt in a minute, but also God's deliverance from death, because at Passover, the angel of death flew over Egypt, and any house that did not have the blood on the doorpost, the firstborn died. So they celebrate God's deliverance from captivity and from death, the deliverance of their families. The Hebrews were redeemed, they escaped, even through the splitting, the parting of the Red Sea. So Passover was a great celebration. There would have been celebration and joy and singing and dancing and walking and selling and eating and all those things. From all different parts of the world, people came and they swelled the population by thousands, not hundreds of thousands, by thousands of Jerusalem. But coming to meet Jesus was a smaller crowd within the larger crowd. And Nynum and others comment that we really don't know how big that crowd was. It was probably hundreds, but it wasn't vast at all. But coming through the crowd comes Jesus upon the colt, and the mother donkey is there, and he is riding in. And contrary to what John said, they didn't throw palm trees in front of him. They threw palm branches. They left the trees there. And John said, you can come and pick up your palm trees. You don't have to. Palm branches will do very nicely, unless you're as strong as John, and you can then bring a palm tree. So palm branches and coats were thrown, so hundreds probably. The interesting thing, it was not a big enough crowd to attract the Roman officials. Now note that the Romans didn't see Jesus particularly as a threat. It was the Jews who were fearful of what the Romans would think. It was the Jewish leaders who were jealous of the turnout and fearful of following Jesus. But we were given a clue, and the clue is written there. The crowd within the crowd was because people who had witnessed Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead, which was a pretty cool thing to do, sent messages ahead. Jesus, who raised Lazarus from the dead, is coming into Jerusalem. Be there to greet us. So as one small crowd came from Bethany and Bethphage, that area, they picked up other people ready to greet them. And so the crowd within the crowd, all right? So that's why other people are saying, well, who is he? Who is he? Oh, this is Jesus, the prophet, as was read to us, from Nazareth. So it was a crowd within the crowd. But that crowd came because of Lazarus, and this is important because that was the straw that in the way was the last straw that broke the camel's back, as we say. We read in the chapter before about the raising of Lazarus in John 11, and we read this, therefore many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did put their faith in Jesus, but some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. Then the chief priests and Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin, and it was the raising of Lazarus that divided the crowd, those that believed and followed Jesus and those that began to go to the Pharisees. And the Pharisees started calling their secret meetings in the night, and within 6/7 days Jesus was crucified. All right, so it was that that was really very significant. So we know that Palm Sunday is a celebration of Jesus's triumphal entry into Jerusalem. It was the center of religious faith, the center of culture, the center of everything. Many nations came to it. Jerusalem was highly significant as it is today. And we have heard two independent accounts, not linked into Mark's account. First, the account that was read to us from Matthew and then from John, the Pharisees and others, because the Sadducees were the chief priests, remember, turned the majority of the crowd against Jesus. So the crowd was divided during that week. What did they use to turn the crowd? Well, what do people normally use to turn crowds? They use false witnesses that told lies about Jesus. So liars came up and said, oh, Jesus said this or did this, and it was out of context, wrong. And also they would have used fear, threats, and maybe bribes to turn enough people in the crowd. And this can happen, can't it? In a school or in a college or in a workplace, people can turn against one person because a few people start spreading nasty rumours. Or they say, I'll do this and I'll be your friend forever. You know, or if you don't be with us, well, we're going to get you after school when you go to the bus stop. And so the crowd was turned. Last slide. Okay, even the close disciples of Jesus, those who loved him the most and were the closest, didn't fully understand the action that Jesus was doing. Some must have thought, oh, this is a nice celebration. He's told us, you know, to pick up the colt and the donkey, to get ready for this. He staged this, Jesus. He waited for this. It was sedate. He was seated. It was humble. It was a parade into Jerusalem. He was seated upon a donkey. And the crowd were jubilant. The Passover crowd, but also the people who'd seen Lazarus raised from the dead. They stripped the branches from the palms. They waved them. And their cloaks were thrown on the ground. And they shouted from Psalm 118, Hosanna to David's son. Praise God. Save the people now. And they saw, that crowd, the potential of Jesus. He could be our deliverer from the Romans, but he could be our deliverer. But also, God, save your people, they were crying out. Save the people now. And it wasn't till later, when they thought about it again, when they reflected, that they understood, as John has said, oh, what Jesus did was what the prophet Zechariah said would happen. People would cut down palm branches and throw them in front of the Messiah, the anointed one we're waiting for. And actually, they were shouting out things from Psalm 118, but also this is interpreted as that prophecy, prediction from Zechariah. Listen to the words, because the good news doesn't translate it very accurately. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, daughter of Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you, righteous and having salvation, gentle and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. So the colt, nobody had ever ridden on at all. In this one statement that Zechariah makes as a prophecy from God, we see so much of the new thing that Jesus is doing. He's calling to the women who would witness the resurrection. He's calling to the daughters, because guys knew their role, but he's calling to them. And he's saying, sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, your God reigns. It was great liberation of that relationship that was broken. And in this Jesus, women find their liberation, and men also. But also he rode on a colt, and it was the virgin ride. The colt had never been ridden before, and it was saying this is something absolutely new that Jesus is doing. It is totally new. It is totally different. This is the new thing. And this was what the Pharisees and the Sanhedrin, including the Sadducees, feared. They feared the Romans' power to remove them as a nation. And so in John 11, they read that. What will the Romans do? Will they take away our place? In other words, will they exterminate and annihilate the Jewish nation if they see that we've got trouble here? And in the second half of John's account, his gospel, we see a growing fear and a plot of the Sanhedrin, in part to silence and remove Jesus from the face of the earth. And I can't spare you this. That was their plan. They didn't like Jesus, some of them. Others loved him, and so that was the plan. And to do this, they must frighten the bulk of the crowd following Jesus into silence. And they did that. And they must incite a small but significant section of the bigger crowd to call for Jesus's execution, which a week later they did. Crucify him, they said. Crucify him. So these days leading up to the Passover and then through to Jesus' arrest were of great significance in turning the crowd. So the lesson I think we must learn, as well as thinking about what Jesus did for us, is this. Crowds can be turned by just a few people. Fear can be used to silence the mouths of believers. You need to remember this if you're following Jesus. We can be turned away very easily by a few people who are doubters or people that threaten us and try to silence us and use fear against us. What would you have done if you were one of the disciples and they came and arrested Jesus? I'm pretty sure I would have been with all the other disciples that ran away. And therefore we can never really criticize the disciples for doing that. And we all feel some sympathy with Judas, even though he was a traitor. We all sympathize with Peter, even though he betrayed, because we know that we might and probably would, I would say I would, have done the same thing. They were turned, even those who loved him. But Jesus was not turned. Luke says he resolutely set his face to Jerusalem. The writer to the Hebrews says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. So my friends, those who are following Jesus, those who are a little bit further back, because that's how it starts the journey, we're not quite sure. Am I going to follow Jesus? Am I going to stay by his side? And we're often a bit further back. And it's not just young people that can be a bit further back. Older people can. They're deciding, do I really believe in Jesus? Am I going to follow him? Am I prepared to stay with Jesus, even if the whole world turns against him? Why? Well, it has to be because he really is who he said he was. Just to remind you of this week as we go through, on Thursday, at Maundy Thursday, we think about the Last Supper. Somebody tell me what happened at the Last Supper very quickly. Put your hand up if you could. What happened at what we call the Last Supper? Yeah, go on. Shout it out. To celebrate, but we go through this week, we try and stay with Jesus this time a little bit and think about how much he loved us. Okay, let's just be still for half a minute, I think, and then we're going to pray for some other people before we close.